Welcome to the teleseminar, The Role of a BA on an Agile or Scrum Team. I'm your host, Tom Melosh. Tonight we'll be interviewing Jerry Winters. Jerry is the president of WYSIWYG, Inc., which produces the website resourcesforbusinessanalysts.com. Jerry has worked as a BA and trained and mentored BAs since 1994. She has a passion, a real strong passion, for finding the best ways for people to learn and for helping people succeed. Jerry has been involved with Agile projects since meeting Scott Ambler in 2000 and getting inspired by the Agile message. For those of us who've been around a little longer, we also remember Jerry as the author of the book Applying Use Cases, A Practical Guide, which is a book I've used for over a decade in teaching use cases. And I told Jerry when I first met her a few years ago that I was probably personally responsible for selling at least 200 copies of her book, because we actually passed it out to students for years and years when we were teaching that class.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Always happy to help your sales. And it's a wonderful book, and I would still use that book and recommend it because it gives very practical step-by-step directions on how to think about applying use cases. If you have any questions during the teleseminar tonight, go to the webcast page that was in your email greeting, and you'll see a box on the left side of the page where you can type your questions. So go ahead and open that page now. There's also a big button on the bottom right of the webcast page that says More BA Resources. You can click on that button to navigate to the Resources for Business Analysts site. Jerry will be posting notes from the teleseminar there that you can review after the seminar. Welcome to the seminar, Jerry.
Well, thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
We have several questions that people have sent in, and I'll be specifically addressing them to you. And we also will have a guest joining you tonight who you've asked to join the call, who's a specialist in Scrum.
Mike, and I am here.
You're there. You just popped on. I was looking for you. And Mike is a certified Scrum Master and is also certified to train Scrum Masters. Am I correct, Mike?
Correct.
And he travels all over the world training Scrum Masters and mentoring companies adopting Scrum. And Mike, you're the creator of the website implementingscrum.com.
Correct.
And I'll be tossing out questions to both of you, and feel free to join in and assist one another. This is really the form of a casual conversation where our other guests are listening in either on the webcast or on the phone. And to clue you off, I'll specifically direct questions, though, to one or the other, and whoever I direct it to can start off, and the other person can join in as they see it's appropriate. So let's dig into the questions right away, trying to keep the call to an hour. And Jerry, we'll hit you with the very first sort of basic question here. Why is the role of a BA on an Agile or Scrum team so important for our listeners to achieve success?
I think it's really important for BAs to look at Agile and Scrum because so many IT departments are trying it out. They're trying some Agile method or they're trying Scrum in their software development. And a lot of people have this really mistaken impression that they don't need a BA on an Agile team or a Scrum team. And I think there's an actual need for it. We may not call the role business analyst, and we might do somewhat different work, but there's still a need for requirements on the teams, and there's still a need to make sure that those requirements are satisfied. So I want to help people understand, you know, how they can fit into these teams and be an effective part of a development team doing Agile or Scrum.
Excellent. Jen, who actually Jerry and I both know, emailed us a question during that and said, I thought Agile didn't use requirements.
I think Jen was pulling my leg. Mike could tell us more about requirements on a Scrum team or an Agile team.
Well, in Agile, you don't look at requirements as your big upfront design anymore. And Agile specifically talks about iterative and incremental development. And Scrum has some different techniques to be able to recast the requirements. instead of looking at it as a big upfront design. We can talk more about that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So we have the why of the role of a BA on an Agile or a Scrum team. So let's move to the what. Jerry, what is the role of a BA on an Agile team?
Well, I think we have to first talk about, you know, Agile and Scrum and what they are, which kind of leads us to iterative development, because Agile development and Scrum teams are all doing kinds of iterative development. So what is that? I mean, a lot of people just don't understand iterative development. Basically, what we're going to do is divide a project into a series of releases called iterations. Here's one of the important parts. Every iteration produces working code that could be but isn't necessarily deployed. So we're building a complete something in every iteration. And the other important thing about an iteration is that it includes all of the development activities. We're going to do planning and requirements and architecture and analysis and design and programming and testing and even some retrospective work where we look back at what we did over the iteration. Every iteration, we're going to do all those things. And so what it is not, like Mike was referring to, it is not big upfront. It is not big upfront requirements. It is not big upfront design. It is doing a small amount of work so that you can identify the iterations, and then in the iterations you do the requirements for that iteration and the design for that iteration, and you don't do the rest until you get to the point in time, you know, where you've allocated to do that, you know, that work for that feature. So really, if we're looking at iterative development, you know, we have a traditional BA role, but instead of the BA doing all these requirements up front and these huge requirements gathering sessions and loads of documentation and then throw it over the wall to development, instead what we'd really like to see is the BA is part of the development team. They're working together. The BA is doing requirements work that needs to be done at that point in time and no more. And they're available to help the developers understand the requirements and to do an additional investigation as the development effort goes along. So I think that's what's really important, you know, about any of the iterative processes, is it doesn't change necessarily the kinds of tasks that the BA does, but it changes your involvement with the development team, and it changes, you know, how much you do at the different points in time. So that's iterative development. And then Agile is really not a process itself. It's really a philosophy about iterative development. And basically what Agile is you do the least amount of work you have to do at any particular point in time in order to get the job done. Okay, so instead of doing the most amount you possibly can, like big upfront requirements and big upfront design, you do the minimum. You do just enough requirements work for someone to be able to do design and coding.
So you do what's the motivation for doing that, Jerry? Why do just the minimal amount you need to do to get the job done?
The reason for doing it is actually because we know information is going to change. So as we build software and we put it in front of the users, that's when they really begin to understand what they want, and that's when we begin to get the actual requirements. So doing a huge amount of requirements up front only to have them change later is a big waste of time for everybody. So if we do a small amount of requirements and we build that code and we show it to the business person, our customer, we say, is this what you meant? And they say, yeah, that's great, or no, that isn't quite it. And you can make adjustments as you go along, but you haven't invested all kinds of time and energy into something that's going to turn out to be wrong.
So the goal is to not spend a massive amount of time, energy, and resources building something that when you're all done, you discover you don't want.
Exactly.
Or doesn't meet your need.
Exactly. So that's how I see, you know, iterative and the BA, you know, iterative and agile and the BA role. I think we just have to get out of it. We've gotten in a habit of BAs of coming in and doing these huge requirements gathering sessions and making all these documents, because that seems to be what everybody expects. So there's this need to push back and say, no, we don't want to do all of that right now. You know, let me just do the part that's needed. you know, and then let the team get going and do the design and coding, and let's see what we came up with. You know, let's see if we got it right, and then we can do some more. And I know part of the reason we're pushed into this is staffing models, where often, you know, the BA will be assigned to a project for some time period, and then they're expected to be assigned to a different project after that. And if you go with a true iterative approach, we're going to have the BA on the team the whole time, from the beginning of the project to the end of the project, because they're part of the development team like all the other, you know, development staff. So that is part of an issue that we have to overcome if we're going to actually do iterative and agile development.
So I know, Mike, that you've been involved in some large enterprise Scrum initiatives.
Yes.
When you're doing that, where does the BA fit into your process when you're rolling out Scrum on the enterprise?
So a lot of what Jerry says is correct, and if your organization or enterprise is using something like Scrum in particular, there's really two main roles that I see that a business analyst traditionally may now be able to play. And the first one is that of product owner. Now, traditional Scrum or pure Scrumist, I guess you could call it that, would say a product owner should not be a business analyst. Because if you look at the traditional role of a business analyst, their job was to take the, I'll say, business blah blah, and be like that babble fish between technical and business. And they'd have to communicate or be a proxy. With Scrum, we're really trying to take out that proxy and have direct communication between the customer, aka the product owner, Scrum, and the development team. So while a lot of teams are out there calling a business analyst a product owner, that might not give you as much lift as possible, productivity. But I've actually found, and this is probably cutting edge on the Agile and Scrum frontiers, is one thing I found is business analysts are very good at communicating. And if you look at the role of a Scrum Master, their job is really to make sure they can facilitate this process or framework, and get things done. And I found actually that the traditional business analyst role make awesome product owners and Scrum Masters.
I've been involved with Agile since about 97, specifically with the methodology known as Extreme Programming.
Mm-hmm.
Two of my developers, actually, in a software development firm I was a director of engineering in here in Ann Arbor, were on the original Chrysler project, where Kent Beck sort of outlined the fundamental behaviors of an extreme programming team.
Yes.
In his model of an extreme programming team, there was no business analyst. In fact, what you did was you captured a business user, and you made them a part of the team. And
correct.
What are problems with doing that? Why would you use a business analyst instead of capturing a user and making them a part of the team?
Gary, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I think there could be a couple of reasons. I've actually worked on projects where the business user just kept telling us they had no time and just do something for me, you know, basically, which is not really what we want. We really want them involved, but they don't want to be involved. And so that might be a case where a business analyst who knows the business really well, like a subject matter expert, might make it a quite a good proxy, because the actual customer, you know, does not want to, for whatever reason, be involved. I think the second way I could see it is if you have a very large project with a lot of customers, you know, a lot of product owners, if we want to use the Scrum terminology. And I know there's some methods for that. Mike might want to talk about it, where you have scrums of scrums, and so you can divide up the work. But another way to do it would be to have several people funneling information into the one business analyst who then becomes the product owner for the team.
And one of the things I normally help use Scrum to push in an organization is, one of the tenets of Scrum and XP is to use the business customer as your product owner. And I'll ask them specifically, is this high enough of importance for you to actually put somebody on the team? And this brings up a lot of different and interesting questions within the organization. And again, Scrum is kind of like, it doesn't really bring up new problems. It really helps expose underlying dysfunctions within the organization. And that's hard for a lot of enterprises and teams to follow.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. My experience, because being a manager involved and watching a bit from a distance the very first extreme programming team, and then building out a company here in Ann Arbor called Menlo Innovations, where we built a dedicated software development house that was doing entirely extreme programming, we determined really quickly we needed a team of BAs. We actually called them high-tech anthropologists at Menlo that incorporated not only skills in interviewing, but also skills in persona development and screen design and usability and techniques in eliciting requirements. So we found a really tremendous need to balance out the developers, whose real focus is on what technology can do and how it does it, with somebody else who was dedicated to communicating with the business what our business's real needs. So I fully support trying to find ways to incorporate BAs into the development team, and recognizing that there's actually a separate skill set independent of software development that really needs to be respected. That being said, how does someone get started being a BA on an Agile or Scrum team? Jerry, I'll let you start. In a step-by-step basis, how would somebody get started to be that role on a team?
Well, I think the first thing is to actually get educated about what is iterative development, or if it's Scrum, what is Scrum? Because one barrier I see for people joining an Agile team or a Scrum team is if they don't know the language, if they don't know how to talk the way the other people talk, then everybody else thinks they just don't know what they're doing. I've run into this a lot. So, if you're going to do iterative development, then you need to know what an iteration is. You need to know what, the expectations are of an iteration. If you're going to do Scrum, you need to know the words of Scrum. You need to know what a Scrum is. What's a Scrum meeting or a Scrum? What's a Scrum master? What's a product owner? What's a team member? What's a product backlog? What's a sprint backlog? You need to know the language so that you can communicate with people, and also so that they believe that you have something to offer. So I think that's a really important first step, is just to get educated, find out, what is this about? If you want to get into Scrum teams, to get training. To get trained as a product owner or get trained as a Scrum master, so that you know what the expectations are of those roles.
And one of the ways to get a quick overview of this is on my site, implementingscrum.com. If you sign up for the blog updates, there's a free overview video of all the terminology and how Scrum is positioned in the market. So it should help give you a quick overview. There's also about 100 comic strips on the site that talk about a lot of the dysfunctions I see when I'm out there in the real world.
And they're great comics, too. I love going over there and browsing the strips. It's so much
fun.
Yeah,
and caution, some of them aren't totally politically correct. So,
so view them at home first?
they're all safe for viewing at work. But,
all right.
They
When you're looking for somebody, if you're in an organization, and I'll toss this out to either of you, and you're looking for somebody to help fill this role from within the organization, what do you go looking for in terms of skill sets among the people you find in a larger organization?
Looking for somebody to fill in.
For the BA on this team. because and maybe I'll state it another way, because Jerry, you and I ran into this. We were both working relatively recently at a large client, and BA seemed to be a title they put on anybody in the organization whom they no longer really knew what they were doing.
Right.
So it was clear that you couldn't be in a large organization and look for somebody with the name, with the title BA, and expect you were getting any sort of specific skill sets.
Right. Well, if I was looking to hire a BA or move a BA onto one of my teams, you know, whether it's traditional product development or agile, hopefully it's agile. One of the things I really look for is the ability to do analysis. And that may sound funny because we're called business analysts, so doesn't everybody do analysis? But actually, a lot of people don't. You know, so just to have someone who has those critical skills to look at information and analyze it, I think, is very, very important. And then, of course, you need the other skills that we traditionally think of with BAs, which is the ability to communicate, the ability to work with a wide variety of people to deal with a large variety of situations. I think those are also very important skills.
And when I have the chance to actually pick an Agile team, a lot of times I'll go into organizations where they're transitioning from the big waterfall methodologies to Agile or Scrum. And what I'll do is go and talk to the key players on the team and maybe talk to one or two. And I don't care if they're analysts or architects or whoever. In your organization, you know who can get things done. And mm-hmm. I'll ask one or two of them if you can put together a team of seven plus or minus two people, who would you take to bring this thing to completion? And usually by the second or third person I talk to, you've got a team that's created. And then I do everything in my power to go ahead and clear out any obstacles or impediments that are in the way so that that team can get things done. And analyst or architect or developer or tester, you're all now part of a team to get stuff done. You're now accountable to finish something, not just create a document or create a PowerPoint and say you're done.
Well, that sort of leads, Mike, into the follow-on question I have here, and I think you've just hit a key part of it, which is if someone were to start working as a BA on an Agile or Scrum team today in their organization, what would be different for them that they would notice likely different from the way they're working? And one way that you seem to have suggested right there is we're actually going to put you on a team that's sort of accountable to a specific project, as opposed to maybe you're time sliced among a dozen projects and you don't really feel like you're a member of any one of them.
Correct.
What other differences would you notice?
Well, I was going to say that's one of the things I really like about Scrum is this focus on delivering. And that's also a focus of other iterative processes as well. Is, you know, we're not focusing on, you know, like Mike said, we're not focusing on making a document. We're focusing on delivering something usable, you know, whether that's a process or software or whatever it is we're delivering. We're delivering something our users can use, and that's the whole point, you know. And we don't focus on, you know, I have to write a document. Because why? Because the software development process at my company says I must produce this document at this point in time. Who cares? That's not the deliverable. The deliverable is what does the software do. And I think that's Scrum really focuses on that, I mean, really, really strongly, you know, delivery. Iterative also has a strong focus on, you know, getting something out and getting something delivered. So I think that's one of the big differences. It's a mindset change you have to do. You know, we don't have a checklist of documents anymore.
Now, that being said, also, it doesn't mean ignore compliance or don't write any documentation. Right? You have to look and make sure that you do enough so that, you know, your CIO is not going to wind up in jail, Sarbanes-Oxley, things like that. Right? You're still accountable to make sure that compliance is not ignored. I see that on a lot of Agile teams. Oh, we're Agile. We don't have to worry about any of this stuff. It gets you a lot of trouble fast.
And I totally agree with you on that.
Well, my experience with Agile, which was especially in people trying to adopt extreme programming, is we'd go, what are the practices you've adopted? And they'd be like, well, we don't do iterative and incremental, and we don't do paired programming, and we don't do automated unit tests, and we don't actually co-locate, and we don't do daily stand-up meetings. But we did stop writing documentation. And, gee, we're not sure why we're not successful. So, and maybe this is, you know, a question for both of you as well, but how much do you run into when you're looking at people trying to adopt this, that what they're really doing is picking and choosing from the methodology the things that they most like or don't like to do, but they're not really trying to understand how the methodology really changes or should change their day-to-day work?
Go ahead, Jerry.
I think that's remarkably common.
It's actually something that keeps consultants in business, honestly, right? Because let's look at it. Everybody wants to try the cool whatever name on the block is, whether it's extreme programming, which focuses a lot on the agile engineering practices, whereas Scrum focuses a lot on the people interactions. And there's not one best method for anybody, right? And if you look back at the days when we were implementing, this may be a bad word, RUP, right? People looked at it as you had to build your empire around that, and look what happened. Whereas RUP, in reality, is a very good agile, iterative, and incremental technique to develop software. It just got overblown. And that can happen in a lot of organizations. And that's something to watch out for in your organization.
Yeah, well, and I think both Jerry and I have been involved as mentors in the past on RUP projects. And it would always be interesting to point out to people from the documentation that came with the process, you know, white papers and other exhortations to not try to adopt all of the tools at once, to not try to adopt all of the techniques at once, but to slowly change the organization and to understand each tool as you're bringing it in, to understand how it's going to impact the organization. And there's things in RUP that I know Jerry and I both are inclined to do to this day, like various types of activities that the business analysts would go through, various types of activities that developers would go through. It's actually not a bad way to think of roles on a team.
Absolutely. And actually, one of the books that Scott Ambler and I wrote, it got published back in 2005, got a horrible title. It's The Enterprise Unified Process. But it talks about all the cross-functional things that you've got to have taken into consideration to be successful rolling out any kind of iterative process. So,
yeah, it's a very good book. I recommend it if some of you haven't read it yet. I think when we look at Agile and we look at Scrum, and there is that temptation, people say, oh, well, this means no management, no requirements. That's the two I hear the most often. I don't know about you, Mike, but those are the two I hear most often. We don't need requirements. We don't need management anymore because we're a Scrum team or an Agile team or an XP team or whatever phrase people want to use. And I think in all cases that misses the point. We still have management. We absolutely have management. And we still have requirements. We're just not doing these huge processes, you know, up front that we're going to have to redo later. And, you know, we're doing more of a just-in-time kind of work model where you do just enough work in order to get the current delivery out. What do you think, Mike?
And Scrum actually allows for some long-term planning and what we call the product backlog and the short-term 30-day iteration planning in our sprint backlog. And a lot of teams misinterpret this and leads to a lot of Scrum failures for adoptions because teams aren't getting done. And this is something that you've got to really focus on is what is it that we really need to do in the next 30 days to satisfy our customer needs? And it's not as a development team or as a product owner or as a BA or as an architect. What does our customer really need to drive their business?
Mm-hmm. And we as a team are responsible for delivering that.
Yep, and it's no longer on the shoulders of the traditional project manager. Right? If a Scrum team fails, Scrum by the book says it's the product owner's fault. Now, in reality, that's the Scrum Master's problem for not working, I think, with the product owner enough, right? It's all one big team, and it talks about personal accountability, which is huge in mind shift and the way people work.
Well, and what I've found anyway in working with the Agile teams is, and we worked in almost always on longer projects on a 2-week iteration cycle, the team gets very focused and motivated to meet those short-term goals. So if the planning has properly been done to sequence a set of short-term goals into a long-term goals, unlike most projects where as you get later into the project, you suddenly discover how far you're behind, instead, because you're doing these iterative and incremental releases, as you near the deadline, you're getting better and better data on how much energy it's actually going to take to finish a project. Because you've been, in fact, releasing it to yourself at the very least on that shorter-term basis.
And you're doing extremely quick and updated risk mitigation, which is something that's not talked about a lot.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's sort of central to all of the practices, but it's subtle. You don't realize that that's actually what you're doing the whole way through.
And I know people talk a lot about, well, we don't talk about risk mitigation. It's part of why you're doing this, is to eliminate risks early and often.
So this is a call for BAs, and it's
yep.
And we're targeting Jerry's BA website. So what are some roadblocks? Maybe we can list three of them that would prevent somebody who wants to work as a BA from working as a BA on an Agile or Scrum team. What's stopping them in the enterprise?
I think one of the first things is the mindset of the person that's playing that role. Right? You're no longer there to do just one thing anymore. Right? You are accountable just like anybody else on the team. And if you want to hide out in an organization, Scrum or Agile is probably not for you. That would be one.
So you're going to be accountable from beginning to end. You don't get to write requirements, toss them over the wall, and say it was somebody else's fault.
Right, and send it over to a change control board. It's not going to happen.
What else things are you seeing, Jerry?
I think some of the Agile and Scrum teams, especially if the BA comes in and says, I'm a business analyst and I want to work on the team, they may not understand how they can use a business analyst on the team. They might think that this business analyst is going to slow down their work because they're going to insist on all these big requirements. So I think, like Mike was saying, for Scrum, you're not going to have a business analyst role, but you do have a product owner and you have a Scrum master. So the BA may find themselves doing some different work. If it's Agile, I think the team is going to be concerned that, as a business analyst, you've been trained to do huge amounts of documentation, and they don't want that.
So the team itself doesn't know how to use you. Go ahead.
Yes,
and this is something to be sensitive to any other member of the team also. Remember, you're not going in and doing mini waterfalls in each iteration anymore. You've got to adopt solid Agile engineering practices, stuff that like XP talks about, extreme programming. And if you're doing mini waterfalls, you're probably not doing Scrum or Agile correctly anyway.
I think that's true because we tend to go with as short an iteration as feasible. And when you have a short iteration, it's more like you're doing everything at once. Isn't that why they call it Scrum? It's like a rugby Scrum. Yeah, you're doing a little bit of everything all at the same time. You don't have a requirements phase in your iteration. You're doing requirements and design and coding and testing pretty much all at the same time.
So
to get everybody thinking that way. Is that what you're getting at, Mike, is that we don't have these defined phases, defined roles. We're just all pitching in and getting it done.
Correct, and I see a lot of teams failing because of that too. And something as a BA, right, they can look out for this on their teams and bring it up, because remember, anybody on the team is personally accountable. It's not just the Scrum Master's responsibility or the product owner's responsibility. You are a member of that team.
Now, Mike, when you're launching a Scrum team, do you send that whole team through some sort of training so that they know what they should be challenging people on?
Ideally, I used to be able to get good amount of time a day or two for project kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, I would be able to explain some of the concepts of Scrum and Agile. In reality, though, it's something that evolves over time, and it's something that a team has to feel out and figure out themselves.
It seems to me to be one of the strengths of a lot of the Agile teams that I've worked with is if you're actually co-locating and out in the open, like a lot of them are, when you point out that you're doing something incorrectly, everybody at least overhears, even if you're pointing it out in casual conversation. If you're talking to the Scrum Master, everyone hears that you're pointing out, oh, look, we're not doing something that it says we should be doing. And it seems to me teams, especially teams that have had, and I always like to point this out, teams that have had success doing something else, when the heat gets turned up, you tend to revert back to whatever worked for you the last time. So teams that I've worked with who've now been doing XP for 10 years, when the heat gets turned up, they actually start writing more unit tests. they actually start doing more of the best engineering practices. But I imagine when you're launching something new, people are going to go back to whatever they were doing before they started to try to do Agile or Scrum.
And that's with anything you try to put in place as a change, and that's a lot of what I talk about. As a Scrum Master and coach on the teams, is this is not an overnight thing. You can't just go in on Monday and saying, we've ordered X copies of X book and we're all doing Scrum today. It's really a recipe for failure, as I think we've all seen.
So I'll ask the follow-up question to you, Mike. If you were starting to do Scrum, how long – we'll put this from the point of view of the poor business analyst who's trying to join this team. How long do they expect to see the Scrum Master around the project? When should they raise the flag if they're saying, well, we don't have the expert around with us long enough to do this work?
Immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, if something's wrong, one of the jobs of a Scrum Master is to make sure that anybody on the team can raise those flags immediately. So if as a BA you're seeing something's going totally off kilter, right, just like any other member of the team, you better raise that red flag and be comfortable about doing it.
Go ahead, Tom.
No.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, there's something that I get asked quite a bit by BAs who are looking at joining Agile and even more so Scrum teams, and they say to me, Jerry, do I have to write code? Because there's this perception that you cannot belong to the team unless you can do all of the jobs. And I've never really felt that way. I mean, I think we use each person to their greatest strength. But I do get asked that question a lot, and so I have to think that there are teams out there saying, well, if you can't write code, you can't be on the team.
And that's unfortunate. I mean, that's somebody who's read something about something and said, this is the only way to do it. You've got to use the skills of the strengths of each people on the team, and part of that is building that as a team.
So if you're on a team as a BA and you're running into various roadblocks that are preventing you from being successful on this Agile and Scrum team, what are the specific strategies you should be trying to implement to overcome those roadblocks?
See, what
Jerry,
were the roadblocks
you
we talked about? one roadblock I think that we had talked about some is that people's mindsets. You have to let go of a mindset that you're going to produce this document, that document, or whatever. And just be willing to go with the flow, to do the work that needs to be done without worrying so much about, the process says I must do this thing at this point in time. So I think that would be one, is just to, you know, for an individual to just look inside themselves and say, you know, can I be flexible?
And another, especially if you find yourself getting caught in the trap of writing documentation for documentation's sake, a trick I've always taught people and found is really effective is search out the person, not the department, the person who's actually consuming whatever artifact is you're producing, and see what it is they really need. Because a lot of times we've all fell into the trap of creating this document that's in perfect insert company's name here format, and the template is just filled out for template's sake. And you get this great template, but really what's really might needed is two paragraphs. Think about the time and effectiveness that's gained by asking those simple questions.
I think that's such a great tip, is to say, well, who's going to use what I'm producing? And then if you can't come up with anybody, then why are you producing it? If you can come up with a person who's going to use it, then ask them what they need. Wow, that's really powerful.
And I see this a lot in like the production support stuff. Because let's think about what happens when production really goes down. Right? If you're in an environment where it's lucky enough that you have a production support team and they're monitoring at 3 o'clock in the morning, what do they really need? A phone number. Okay? And you ask any developer, what do they do when they go in to start debugging the problem? They don't trust their own documentation. Right? They go where? Code. Okay?
That's right.
So it's a lot about just consistent and honest feedback and making sure that you cover each other's backs on your team.
And I would add an additional strategy in for those who are seeking to overcome some of the roadblocks is to educate yourself as much as you can about Scrum and Agile and the various flavors that are out there, books, training classes. You both have websites. So learning to speak the language of the team, but also learning then how your skills as an analyst can augment that team. It's very likely that the engineers, the software developers, you know, not only do not have good usability training, but in fact their intuition is counterintuitive for good usability training, which is sort of the theme of the whole book, The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. By the time you've developed the skills to be a software engineer, your sense of what is intuitive and obvious is totally disconnected with 99% of the rest of the world. And that's actually where an analyst can come in and can develop the skill sets to help translate between not just the user's needs to communicate them to the software development team, but actually to aspects of the interaction design between the system and the users before it gets passed off to the engineers. And at least in our instance of creating the high-tech anthropology team, that's really where we saw the biggest return on using analysts, was you got much more usable systems at the end than when we just had a user sit in with the engineering team. I suspect one of the reasons why just having a user sit in with the engineering team is sort of counterproductive is whoever is willing to do that probably isn't really a user. They think they are, but they're willing to spend all day sitting around with the engineers, so they're a little suspect.
If they're a user, why aren't they off doing that job? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. Well, and how long does it count? I was working for a company that developed ultrasound machines, and for years now, somebody had come into the organization, and they represented the users. Actually, they were in the role of analysts, but they didn't know it, because they continued to be introduced as a user. Well, this is a person who hadn't done an ultrasound in 5 years. They might have made a great analyst, but when it actually came to interacting with users, they needed to go interact with users, not pretend like they were one still.
And one of the roles of that product owner on the team is making sure that you have the right user. Right? You don't want somebody that's stale, that's giving the wrong information, or even worse, not saying, I don't know, and I'll get back to you in a timely fashion. Okay. And a lot of times with Scrum teams, I spend a lot of time actually trying to identify who is the right product owner. Okay. And one of the reasons to have that product owner is to start focusing the team away from the system shall do this and the system shall do this to, as a user, I need this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge shift once the entire Scrum team or Agile team starts focusing on the user needs instead of what they needed.
So if somebody thinks they want to be a BA still after listening to this call on an Agile or a Scrum team, what are some of the first physical things they should actually do to get started? What would you suggest their next steps be?
Well, I think they should want to be, well, I shouldn't say should, but I should think people would be interested in being a BA on an Agile team. I have totally loved working in an Agile team, you know, as a business analyst. It's so much more fun. Oh, my gosh. There I am with the development team. We're working together, and things are getting done, and we see them working. It's so cool. I mean, it was the most fun I've ever had is working on a iterative Agile type teams. It's so much fun. But it isn't for everybody, and I see that too. It can be a little frightening because things are so flexible, approaching chaotic sometimes, but with a goal in mind. So I do hope people aren't frightened off by the idea. In terms of getting started, I think what we've talked about a couple times is education. This teleseminar, notes from the teleseminar, I'm posting at resourcesforbusinessanalysts.com. I've also posted some links to websites that have information, such as Mike's site, Implementing Scrum. That link is posted there where people can just click on the links and go visit these other websites and see there's all kinds of good information out there to get educated on Agile and on Scrum.
And I would just also reiterate, this is not for everybody. And it's okay. This is an important thing to realize. It's okay if you don't like doing this. Most organizations are not 100% Scrum or Agile and 100% whatever else it is now. But there are other things that you can do in an organization.
Mike, if a BA was you said that the BA, traditional BA role and product owner roles are actually different, but that a BA a traditional business analyst is somebody who you might become a product owner in Scrum. What would be a path for a BA to look at to try to become a product owner if their organization was adopting Scrum?
Depending on really the type of software you're developing, one of the things I'd watch out for as a business analyst is to just fall into the trap of I'm a business analyst so I can be the product owner. And really ask yourself, are you the right person? Or are you just playing the old role that you used to? Okay? And this is an important distinction now, because remember, as a business analyst on a Scrum team, you are just accountable as everybody else. So you can't hide. And this is not just to business analysts. This is to anybody on an Agile team.
Does that make it harder to get people to adopt in larger organizations?
Absolutely.
Because they're used to being able to hide. I mean, that's one of the benefits of working in a bigger company. There's a lot of reasons to hide.
And this is why a lot of teams fail, because they will go back and do whatever they were comfortable doing before.
Right. Yeah, you fall into those habits. Mike, do you have like reading lists and recommendations for people interested in Scrum on your website if a BA were to head over there?
Absolutely. Or they can go ahead and email me. There's contact information on the site. There's a lot of crap out there, and I've read a lot of it. If you need specific ideas for topics, please feel free to email me or call anytime.
Great.
And if I have anything laying around, I'll be able to drop it usually in FedEx for you.
One of our listeners asked, what's the most effective role for a BA on an Agile or a Scrum team? How can the BA be the most effective? Jerry?
Well, I think we've pretty much covered that, I believe. I mean, if they're on an Agile team, they're still going to do BA work. It's just, you know, in a lightweight, responsive manner. If it's Scrum, you know, I think Mike's suggestion was really great. If you think you want to be a product owner, ask yourself, am I the right person, you know, for this particular team, for this particular product? Am I the right person to do that role? And also look at the Scrum Master role, which is more like a manager, more like a project manager. But a lot of BAs do that work as well. So I think it's worth looking at that as an alternative.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a trick question, because in reality, the most effective role for a BA is a BA. The process hopefully is intelligent enough to recognize that it still needs one. We almost immediately abandoned Kent Beck's idea of always putting a user on the team when we started doing extreme programming. It was, of all the practices he listed, it was the only one that we effectively said, no, that's crazy. Almost everything else we did verbatim. But in order to be in the spirit of extreme programming, we called that role the voice of the user. It was the role of the business analyst on the team to be the voice of the user into the Agile team that we were running.
And that's probably one of the differences between Scrum and XP, is really Scrum tries to bring the customer directly involved. And as a business analyst, just like any other traditional role you used to have, you're now a member of a team that's delivering solutions for your customers.
Right. And reconnecting. And I guess if you're, you know, I've seen some of the most effective Agile development done, of course, on web development, where the team from day one was in the habit of actually releasing to end users, you know, as much as every day on various mm-hmm. web projects. And so you get a very natural flow from idea, from feature to a requirement, implementation to deployment to user feedback. And you don't go through long iterative cycles that make that less obvious that that's in fact what you're getting, is that continuous flow of ideas and communications throughout the team.
But it's not limited to just little web projects. This is scalable to huge enterprise organizations throughout the world.
What's the biggest project you've seen this work with successfully, Mike?
I'm working with a few clients right now that have over 5,000 people in their organization doing this.
Doing
Scrum.
Doing Scrum. So it scales up.
Yes. And there's a couple of good places to look for how do you actually scale this. It's probably for another talk.
Well, for the Scrum talk.
Yes.
And Jerry, do you have anything else you'd like to add to that piece of the conversation?
No.
We're getting down to our final questions.
I pretty much covered it. Yeah.
I think we're going to then wrap up our conversation for this evening on the role of a BA on an Agile or Scrum team. We'll be placing a copy of this recording. Will be available at the location you went to for the webcast. So it's linked to via the email. And Jerry, I'm assuming you're also going to be putting or linking to a copy from your website.
Yes, absolutely. So it will be at resourcesforbusinessanalyst.com. The webcast page, again, has a button that you can click to go there, and also there's a link to Mike's site on the webcast page. So if you're interested in visiting implementing Scrum, you can click on that button as well.
So direct links will be provided to resourcesforbusinessanalyst.com and implementingscrum.com. Thank everybody for all of the questions that were submitted that we used to sort of outline the questions that we used this evening, and for all the interest in the topic. And thank you very much, Mike and Jerry, for joining us this evening.
And thanks for everybody for listening.
Thanks.
Yes, thanks, everyone. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.